I think it was the plan to drag us into a conference committee and then delay and delay trying to get us to say yes to taxes, and we're just not going to do it.
The special session limps along with the Senate adjourned and House members still meeting. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Monday, November 13th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, UA faculty consider organizing to push for pay increases.
The staff councils have started collecting feedback from each campus to determine if unionization would be in the best interest of the staff.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Going without health insurance could be financially devastating. Healthcare bills are the leading cause of personal bankruptcy. Open enrollment for 2018 plans is November 1st through December 15th. A household of four with an annual income of less than $123,000 may qualify for federal tax credits to help cover premium costs. Get signed up for health insurance at healthcare.gov today. This message sponsored by the Alaska Division of Insurance.
The Alaska House met today in Juneau, but the Senate has adjourned, with members returning to their homes. With as many as 8 days left in the special session, we're talking with Alaska Public Media and KTOO's Andrew Kitchenman about what's happening in Juneau. Hi, Andrew.
Hi, Lori.
So, Andrew, how did lawmakers end up here?
It really comes down to the fact that the two chambers have different views on the two bills that are on the special session agenda. The Senate majority wanted to address a bill revising criminal sentencing as quickly as possible. They had passed the bill back in the spring and sent it over to the House. The House didn't really do anything with it until the special session. The Senate wanted that dealt with quickly. Other than that, Senate leaders say that now isn't the time to consider the other bill, which is a tax bill that Governor Bill Walker had included in the special session call. The House majority wanted to spend time on both bills, and it was hoping to pass the tax ahead of next year's session. House members felt some urgency because next year is an election year.
All right. So you've described how the two chambers differ on the two bills, but why did the Senate adjourn on Friday?
Well, first, the House did pass that criminal sentencing bill and sent it over to the Senate. There were differences, and there was a thought on the House side that there would be a conference committee. Instead, the Senate adjourned. They passed the bill, they accepted the changes the House had made, and they adjourned. And by adjourning, the Senate made a statement that it didn't want to spend any more time on the tax bill. Now, there's a problem with saying that they adjourned, because the Alaska State Constitution says that neither chamber can adjourn for more than 3 days without the agreement of the other side. The House hasn't adjourned, so the Senate and the House could continue to hold sessions with just a few members, and those are known as technical sessions, until the scheduled last day of the session, which is next Tuesday.
Andrew, what is the point, or is there a point to this?
Well, from the perspective of House Speaker Bryce Edgman, he says he's hoping that the Senate will change its mind. So Edgman says the first thing he'd like to do is fix a provision of the criminal sentencing bill, which is Senate Bill 54. That provision may unconstitutionally require people who commit Class C felonies for the first time to face the same penalties as if they had committed more serious Class B felonies. And that may be unconstitutional. Here's Edgman.
We can certainly get the House back into action and take any major action should the Senate all of a sudden decide that they want to come back and fix that C felony provision of Senate Bill 54. And really, if the Senate wanted to work on the fiscal plan, we would be more than willing to jump right back in on that as well.
For his part, Senate President Pete Kelly says the Senate was open to fixing Senate Bill 54 on Friday, but the House didn't have enough members to act on that day. And so the Senate adjourned. Kelly says he was concerned that if the Senate stayed, the House would have tried to use the rest of the session to push for the tax bill.
I think it was the plan actually all along for them to drag us into a conference committee. And then, as happened during the regular session and the other special sessions, delay and delay and delay, trying to get us to say yes to taxes, and we're just not going to do it.
So the two sides remain far apart.
All right, Andrew, thank you. We'll be interested and watching to see if there are any developments in this next week.
And I'll continue to report on what's left of the session, Lori.
That was Alaska Public Media and KTOO's Andrew Kitchenman reporting from Juneau. A $917 million University of Alaska System operating budget for next year approved by UA Regents does not include non-union employee pay raises. UA President Jim Johnson addressed the lack of pay increases when rolling out the FY19 budget request for Regents at a meeting last week.
I think it's realistic given our state and our university's fiscal situation, but I don't think it's a good thing.
I hope that you will please keep in mind that adequate compensation is crucial to retention and recruitment of high-quality faculty and staff.
That was Faculty Alliance Chair Lisa Hofferkamp also speaking to Regents about the issue.
Without offering competitive salaries that take into account cost of living differential, UA's challenges, including accreditation, enrollment, as well as many others, will not only continue, but I believe they will worsen.
FY19 will be the second year in a row that non-union staff and faculty have not received a salary increase. Staff Alliance Chair Kara Axe echoed concern about pay stagnation.
It's been a while for an increase, and we're all taking on additional responsibilities at the same time.
Axe noted that staff councils at each campus are looking into unionizing.
The staff councils have started collecting feedback from each campus to determine if unionization would be in the best interest of the staff.
Axe applauded an announcement by President Johnson that a pay comparison study is in the works.
A thorough external and internal salary and benefits analysis.
Johnson says the research will likely be contracted with results available in the spring in time for consideration of pay in the following year's budgeting process. A woman was struck and killed by a car along the Alaska Highway near Delta Junction today. Alaska State Troopers say a driver called after 7:30 this morning, reporting the accident near Alcan Milepost 1401, about 15 miles south of Delta. Troopers say the driver told them the woman walked into the road and they were unable to stop in time. Trooper spokeswoman Megan Peters says next of kin are being notified, after which more information will be made available. She added troopers from Fairbanks are investigating. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a look at the debate over the Pebble Mine in a village close to the proposed site.
Well, there's always drama in any small community, but the main thing we always come together for is always the kids.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Thinking about completing your college degree? Good news, you can finish it right here at the University of Alaska. Go after your dream by earning a bachelor's, master's, a certificate, or an associate degree at the University of Alaska. Flexible classes, convenient schedules, affordable choices, and outstanding faculty, the university has it all. It's your choice, your dream. See how the University of Alaska can help you achieve it at alaska.edu/start here. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska.
The lights are back on in Newtok. After 3 days without electricity, power returned to the village last evening. According to Assistant Tribal Administrator Dallin Aluluk, the community power company turned off Newtok's electricity Thursday afternoon to fix mechanical issues. Throughout the cold days, he says people without wood stoves or personal generators slept in the school to keep warm, and community members brought food to feed the crowd. He says the community has been here before. Last winter, a generator broke down, leaving Newtok without electricity for 5 days during deep winter. Aluluk says this outage wasn't as cold as the previous one. He says the outage last winter had prepared the village to know what to do during a multi-day blackout. The Trump administration is currently weighing a decision that could alter the future of the Pebble Mine and the Bristol Bay Region communities nearby. That includes Dillingham and Illiamna. They are the only places the Environmental Protection Agency visited last month to get public input on whether to scrap an Obama-era proposal to put restrictions on the mine. In Dillingham, residents spoke unanimously against the idea. But in Illiamna, the reaction was more mixed. Elizabeth Harbaugh from Alaska's Energy Desk has this portrait of a resident who is still deciding whether the mine is a good idea.
Evelyn Trifon wears a lot of hats. She's the school secretary. She's on the city council. She's on the board of the electric co-op. She also runs a business selling fruit in the summer. And tonight, she's my tour guide, driving me around New Halen and Illiamna. As Trifon shows me the lay of the land, her four-year-old daughter sits patiently in the back seat.
Up the road at Tizimna, about.
Hello, I am an artist.
Yeah? Trifon's originally from Kansas, but she moved to New Halen in 2011 with her husband, who grew up here. New Halen and Illiamna are home to about 350 people total, spread out along quiet roads by the north shore of the biggest lake in Alaska. We turn a corner and get a spectacular view.
This is Lake Illiamna. I think it's 45 miles across and 90 miles long.
Wow. It's like a sea.
Yeah, it does. It looks, and when it's blowing, when the waves are coming up, it looks like an ocean.
But as we continue on, Trifon starts to describe other landmarks in a very specific way.
So that's the clinic there. The clinic employs quite a few people, too. The post office only employs one person. The clinic employs two health aides.
Whenever we pass a business or an office, Trifon tells me how many jobs it provides. The same thing happens when we pass the Illiamna Village Council.
And they employ probably four or five people.
It's not a random fixation. Poverty rates here are higher than average for Alaska. The top employer is the New Halen School, where Trifon works as a secretary. But that might not always be the case.
This is Pebble's headquarters now, right there.
If it's built, the Pebble Mine would be about 20 miles from Illiamna. The company argues one reason it belongs there is it would provide more local employment. Trifon tells me when the large mining company Anglo American left the Pebble Project in 2013, a lot of people lost their jobs. She says some have found work elsewhere, like with the oil industry on the North Slope.
But then that takes them away from their families, and that takes them away from their friends, that takes them away from their subsistence lifestyles. So it's hard. It's a hard choice if you want to work.
That helps explain why opinions were so mixed at EPA's hearing in Illiamna last month. Mothers like Trifon stood before federal officials and argued both for and against the mine. That included Margie Olympic from New Halen, who has worked for Pebble for the last 11 years.
I am very grateful that I have a job, that I can put food on the table, pay bills, have private insurance, get what my kids need and want, and enjoy the luxuries of a car, four-wheeler, boat, snow machine, new furniture, and the best part is I don't have to get up and leave my community.
But a different mother told EPA officials she feared the mine could endanger the salmon fishery, and salmon provide jobs too. Renee Zakhar of Igyagig explained how salmon have supported her entire family.
My husband and I put up fish every summer. My two sons commercial fish in Bristol Bay. All three of my daughters worked at commercial fish processing in Naknek for 2 years. Two of my daughters went to the Fly Fishing Academy program.
Trifon was at the hearing, but she didn't stand up and speak. She simply sat quietly and listened to what others had to say. As Trifon starts to drive back to where I'm staying for the night, her daughter pipes up from the back seat.
I'm sleepy.
You could lay down.
I asked Trifon, so what about the salmon? Trifon says yes. Subsistence fishing here is abundant. She turns down a gravel road and points towards another local landmark.
So this road just takes you to the rapids, which is a pretty world-famous place to go fishing.
Do you fish a lot?
Oh yeah, I love to fish.
Every summer, Trifon sees two species of salmon return to spawn in the river behind her house. The Pebble Partnership argues it can build the mine without harming the fishery. But if something goes wrong, Trifon wonders if the salmon could find their way back. I ask her if the Pebble Mine controversy has made things uncomfortable in New Halen and Illiamna.
Well, there's always drama in any small community, but the main thing we always come together for is always the kids. I mean, we both have the both
communities are fed into the New Haven school, and we always come together for the kids.
That's part of why Trifon decided to make a life here. For her, her husband, and her daughter, who is now fast asleep in the back seat.
I love living here. I can't imagine living anywhere else.
If the Pebble Mine gets built, it will bring significant changes to the small slice of rural Alaska that Trifon calls home. Just like her community, Trifon has mixed feelings about the mine. She hasn't decided whether she thinks it's a good idea or a bad idea. She says New Haven and Iliamna do need jobs. But a few hours after Trifon dropped me off and we said goodnight, she sent me a text. It read, "One last thought. Jobs are important, but salmon are more important." For Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Elizabeth Harbaugh.
The state of Alaska is again trying to overturn the U.S. Forest Service's roadless rule. Last week, officials appealed a September court decision that threw out an earlier state challenge. The rule mostly blocks logging in undeveloped areas of the Tongass National Forest. It was established more than 15 years ago, but the Tongass was given an exemption that was later overturned. Assistant Attorney General Tom Lenhart says the state continues to challenge the roadless rule because it's damaging Southeast Alaska's economy.
It's played a key role in the almost complete demise of the timber industry. It's impacted utility companies, rural communities who may have future plans to build additional roads to connect to the outside world.
The Southeast Alaska Conservation Council is one of the environmental groups that supported the rule in court. Attorney Buck Lindekugel says the state's appeal doesn't make sense.
They seem stuck in the past. Today's economy here in Southeast is driven by tourism, recreation, and fishing, not old-growth logging.
State Forester Chris Maish manages state timberlands near the Tongass National Forest. He says the timber economy could grow if the roadless rule is overturned.
It essentially provides the ability to manage in a much more flexible manner, not only just forest resources, but energy resources, as well as mining resources on the forest.
Among other arguments, the state says the roadless rule violates federal legislation requiring the U.S. Forest Service to meet the demand for Tongass timber. The state filed this case in the U.S. District Court for the District of Columbia. The appeal was made to the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals. After a dangerous ammonia leak last winter, Kloosterboer Dutch Harbor is renovating its refrigeration system, investing in its hazmat team, and paying a $10,000 fine. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency announced the settlement. It holds the seafood cold storage company responsible for violating emergency response statutes after an industrial freezer leaked 125 pounds of ammonia and seriously injured a worker caught inside.
They did immediately call 911, but they were very delayed in reporting to the state and the federal reporting requirement.
Aaron Williams is an emergency planning and response coordinator for the EPA. She says Kloosterboer was almost 2 days late in notifying the necessary agencies, putting first responders at risk. The company could have been fined more than $100,000, but the penalty was reduced when Kloosterboer agreed to install extra safeguards.
One of which is updating computerized refrigeration control systems at their facility. It provides leak detections, alarms, and emergency shutoff.
Kloosterboer is also training 2 employees in hazmat response and donating emergency equipment to the Unalaska Department of Public Safety. The prevention projects are estimated to cost $26,000. Kloosterboer's Ron Rognes declined to answer questions about the incident, which marked the company's first EPA violation. But in a written statement, he said the settlement will, quote, ensure possible future ammonia leaks will be detected.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
ExxonMobil Alaska. Their financial investment and partnership with local companies at Point Thompson helps contribute to Alaska's economy and jobs for Alaskans. ExxonMobil, energy lives here. Open enrollment for the health insurance marketplace in Alaska is now through Friday, December 15th. Enrollment assistance is available and it's free. Visit getcoveredalaska.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Children's Trust.
The Trump administration has appointed a new Northwest Regional Director for HUD, the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. Jeffrey McMorris of Issaquah, Washington, began his new job this week. McMorris has been chief of staff for a King County councilwoman. He is now the top executive in Region 10, covering Alaska, Washington, Oregon, and Idaho. McMorris is the brother of Republican Congresswoman Kathy McMorris Rogers of Washington. She was widely reported to be a front runner for Interior Secretary, but President Trump picked Ryan Zinke instead. HUD administers grants to state, local, and tribal governments, as well as public housing authorities. The Bureau of Land Management is reviewing the effects of races and commercial tours on BLM portions of the Iditarod Trail. The environmental assessments cover the trail between the Alaska Range and the village of Nikolai and from Caltag and Unalakleet. BLM Public Affairs Specialist Maureen Clark says study of events, including the Iditarod Trail Sled Dog Race, the Iron Dog Snow Machine Race, and the Iditarod Trail Invitational Ski, Bike, and Foot Race, were last conducted 10 years ago when permits were issued. Clark says those permits are now expiring and the new reviews will take into account changing winter trail uses.
For instance, when we did our last assessment, snow bikes weren't really in use the way they are today. In addition, for the first time this past winter, we had an international ecotourism group on the trail.
Clark says changes can be made to existing use permits based on review of environmental impacts.
Basically, we're looking at what is the capacity before we start affecting the characteristics of the trail, the natural characteristics that make the trail what it is. So it helps us to understand the uses that we have, and we can be better informed when we consider issuing permits for additional activities.
Clark says the assessment also helps minimize conflicts between trail users. She notes it's additionally helpful for managing BLM infrastructure along the trail,
including the Roan Historic Cabin and outhouses and safety cabins along the trail.
Public input is being accepted throughout today. Along with setting Alaska's hunting regulations, the State Board of Game also makes decisions about what animals Alaskans are allowed to keep as pets or livestock. Ferrets, alpacas, and one-humped camels are all on the okay list. At this year's meeting, currently underway in Anchorage, the Game Board is considering a proposal to allow a new species, the lesser hedgehog tenrec. As Alaska Public Media's Casey Grove reports, some tenrecs are already here, living in hiding.
The lesser hedgehog tenrec is not actually a hedgehog. They look like hedgehogs, but they're not even closely related. And even though they're illegal, there are at least a couple tenrecs in Alaska. One of them, named Lemon, was sprawled out in the palm of my hand recently at a house in the Matanuska Susitna Borough. Lemon perks up when she sees a small bowl of worms. Like other tenrecs, Lemon is covered in hard, dull spines, and she has a pointy face like a rodent's. Her owner, we'll call her Stacy, agreed to an interview if we promised to alter her voice and not identify her.
She's sweet and cuddly. I can carry her around. She'll sit in my shirt, or she has a little pouch that I can carry her in.
Stacy says she had a hedgehog once, and it did not go well. Other unhappy hedgehog owners on Facebook told Stacy about tenrecs, which are mellower and cleaner. Some people, like the former Alaska resident who proposed allowing them, described them as hypoallergenic. When she got Lemon from a breeder in the lower 48, Stacy wasn't aware that tenrecs are illegal in Alaska. Among other steps in the process, Lemon had to get checked by a veterinarian. Stacy figured somebody along the way would have warned her, but they didn't. It turns out Alaska doesn't have a list of banned pets, just one with those that have been allowed. It's also unclear how many states have legalized tenrecs like Lemon.
I have grown quite fond of her, so I of course don't want anything to happen where I would get in trouble for having her or lose her. That's definitely a huge concern. She's grown to be part of her family.
Stacy has reason to be concerned. The Alaska Wildlife Troopers say that if they become aware of a prohibited pet, they would have to investigate. Major Bernard Chastain, Deputy Director of the Wildlife Troopers, says there are only so many options, and they all involve getting rid of the pet.
Options may include the owner of the animal actually euthanizing the animal, potentially the owner shipping that animal out of state to a location where someone could possess it legally.
And in cases that Chastain describes as extreme,
if the person refuses to comply and it warrants law enforcement getting involved, we would potentially seize the animal and charge the person for possession.
Tenrecs might have an uphill battle in Alaska. The Department of Fish and Game opposes making them legal. Despite the fact that U.S. breeders raise them in captivity, Fish and Game says allowing tenrecs as pets could encourage the pet trade in a species that presents a conservation concern in its native habitat. If the game board agrees, that would leave Stacy and Lemon in the same predicament.
That is a huge concern because I've never had an illegal pet, or, you know, I might speed sometimes, but otherwise I generally don't do anything wrong. It is a little stressful. It's stressful having her.
So unless something changes, Little Lemon has to stay a secret. In the Matsu Borough, I'm Casey Grove.
Climate change models continue to show high latitudes heating up before other parts of the globe. In Alaska, thawing permafrost threatens buildings and roads. As KUAC's Robert Hannon reports, a series of seminars in Fairbanks for builders and homeowners offer information on techniques to meet the challenge.
Robin Garber-Slatt is a research engineer with the Cold Climate Housing Research Center in Fairbanks. She says frequently homes in the interior were designed with permafrost in mind. Many buildings rest on pilings to keep the ground below the structure cold. She says it's a good technique if the climate and conditions are stable.
Right now what we have is a lot of change and flux. Our permafrost is really close to melting.
Which is why the Cold Climate Housing Research Center is offering a pair of seminars to builders and homeowners on permafrost. Garber-Slatt says despite the long history of building on frozen soil around Fairbanks, many builders and homeowners are hungry for information.
We get phone calls quite a bit, and that's probably the majority of the questions are about permafrost and changes in the soils around homes.
Among the tools that will be shared in the seminar is a new construction technique that sidesteps traditional pilings.
We actually created a really thick foundation of foam that we put directly on a gravel pad on permafrost.
Tonight's class will focus on the latest information about permafrost with the November 27th seminar dealing with building foundations. Both take place at the Cold Climate Housing Research Center. In Fairbanks, I'm Robert Hannon.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. Tonight's stories can be found at our website, alaskapublic.org. You can also find us on Facebook at Alaska Public Media and follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Andrew Kitchenman and Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau, Dan Bross and Robert Hannon in Fairbanks, Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Anna Rose MacArthur in Bethel, Elizabeth Harbaugh in Iliamna, Casey Grove in Anchorage, and Laura Craigle in Unalaska. Our audio engineer is Eric Bork, Wesley Early is our web editor, and I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
And by
Wells Fargo, offering financial tools to start, run, and grow a business. Learn more at wellsfargoworks.com. Colder temperatures are here, and the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation reminds you of the danger of carbon monoxide, a poisonous gas that you can't see or smell. If it builds up in your home, it can be deadly. Be safe this winter and have a qualified mechanic ensure your heating system is working properly. Never run your car in the garage or operate a portable generator in an enclosed space. Finally, always ensure your home has a working carbon monoxide detector. This message sponsored by AHFC.
One of the greatest honors for a public media station is delivering on its promise to provide quality programming and news you can trust to the communities it serves. What you hear on air is the result of a dedicated team working together to bring you the best. It's a privilege to be a part of your day. Thank you for listening, for your feedback, and for your support. This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.